Hi, welcome to This Is Your Book Club podcast. I'm Sarah.
And I'm Jamie.
It's so good to be back today. We're back. We're super excited about today's episode.
So excited.
It's something new, and we hope that it's something we can continue. So let us know what you think, for
sure. Absolutely. We're super excited and hope we can do it more often.
But before we get to that, we need to do our fun fact.
Fun fact. So a fun fact for Chanel Cleeton, last train to
Key West.
Key West. Thank you. My brain just went to Tribeca. Ooh. And that has nothing to do with it. Where
that
did my
sounds
brain?
Sounds like a neat place too.
The last train to Key West by Chanel Cleeton. And so I've been reading a lot about her and how her journey through her life and school and how she got to be an author. And I found this interview that is on GreerMcAllister.com, and the blog post is titled Women's History Reads Interview with Chanel Cleeton.
Cool.
And the interview is great. I loved this one question they asked. They asked her, tell us about a woman or a group of women from the past who has inspired your writing.
Ooh.
Love this. So Chanel said, my most recent books, Next Year in Havana and When We Left Cuba, have largely been inspired by women in my family, particularly my grandmother. My grandmother lived with us growing up, and we had a special bond. She used to tell me stories of her life in Cuba, and she passed on so much of our history and culture to me and really gave me a great appreciation for where I came from. She was a strong, unapologetic, fierce woman, and I've injected a lot of her spirit into my characters. My grandmother was pregnant with my father during the Cuban Revolution and lived through a tumultuous time in the 8 years she lived in Cuba under Castro's regime, and then her exile to the United States. I was inspired by her strength and courage when writing Next Year in Havana and When We Left Cuba, and strove to honor her legacy with my words.
Wow.
I had such a strong relationship with my grandmother that when I look at this and just that, the teaching of where they came from, even though they're not in Cuba anymore, but that they still hold on to their culture and they would want to be there if things were different.
Right.
But it's still such a part of them. And then she put that on to her granddaughter, and that will live. I mean, that goes down through the generations.
She wrote books that are all centered around that. And so it really is going to stick for a long time,
and not just with their family. This is an influence of readers everywhere.
Absolutely.
To learn a little bit more about Cuba,
cool.
Which is really something I know very little about. And so I'm so excited to read her other books as well, because this is something I don't know a lot about.
She is a fun author.
Yeah. So I just love that she can, you know, and what an honor to have written a little bit of your posterity into your characters.
That's like so cool.
Very cool. Very cool. That will live on forever.
I am really excited about this book.
I am too.
Did you know that the whole book takes place over one weekend?
No.
Yeah. Cool.
Very cool.
I'm
so excited.
Yeah.
It is next on my list. I'm finishing up a book. Actually, two I'm working on two right now over this weekend, and then I start next week on this one. So I'm really excited that
we're
to that point in the month that I get to. I've been talking about it for so long. We get to read it now.
I know. I'm super excited.
It's going to be a good one.
But today,
today
we have a really fun surprise for you guys. It is a surprise because we've never done this before,
right?
And we haven't really talked about doing it before,
no,
at least on here, and. We have been talking about it behind the scenes quite
a
bit.
For a long time.
And we finally made it happen. So today we have new author Karma Chestnut with us. She is going to talk to us about her new book, Unfit.
Uh-huh.
And
which
also,
you read and talked about on a previous podcast episode of What's on Your Shelf. You had read this prior, and I just finished it before the interview. So
we've both read it.
We've both read it.
I definitely recommend it. Go check it out.
Great book.
Unfit. You can find it on Kindle and all the places.
Amazon.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And we talk about her journey to becoming an author.
Mm-hmm.
and, you know, what she's reading.
Yeah, of course.
I know. So it's going to be really good. Before we bring her on, let me give you a little bit of a bio. Let me read it for you. Karma Chestnut is a writer, mother, anthropologist, and author of the novel Unfit. Born and raised in Seattle, Washington, she spent her childhood writing short stories, dreaming up new worlds, and studying the more fascinating and sometimes macabre parts of human history. Pursuing her love of history and human behavior, Karma earned her bachelor's degree in anthropology from Brigham Young University and went on to participate in a variety of academic studies ranging from archaeological digs in the Utah desert to ethnographical research in New Zealand. So cool.
Very cool.
Karma lives in California with her husband and their three daughters, the snake hunter, the princess, and the baby.
Oh, I love it.
I know. I'm so fun.
I'm so excited for you guys to meet her.
I know. She is so fun. So let's bring her out.
Let's do it.
All right. Here is Karma. Karma, thank you so much for joining us today.
We're so excited.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. No, we are so excited to have you. Okay. In case anybody didn't know already, Karma, I'm related to Karma. So I feel very privileged to have such an amazing person in my family. Karma is my cousin's wife. So thank you, Karma, for, you know, being nice to your family.
No problem at all.
But and more than that, like, I don't know if all of our readers our listeners have read your book yet, but I'm hoping that they're going to want to after they hear this.
They're going to want to.
I think so.
Unfit
is a really fun story. Just to give a little bit of a background, it's kind of dystopian novel. You find the characters. I mean, what time frame would you put your book in? We were trying to figure that out.
It could really fit in the future. It could fit in the past.
Yeah, so it's supposed to be in the future. Kind of the timeline I had set up in my head is, I mean, it's not so far in the future that, you know, technology has advanced very much. So it's basically 100 years from our future. But in those 100 years, there has been a pandemic. I wrote this. I started writing this 3 years ago, just so you know. The timing of when it came out was just completely bizarre. But yes, so there's a pandemic, and the pandemic leads to a series of wars. And so basically in those 100 years, 90% of the population has been wiped out from either the pandemic or the wars. It has completely collapsed. Technology has kind of regressed to what it was, say, like World War I era. And in some places, they don't really even have electricity at all. It's completely collapsed. So yeah, it's a futuristic story, but it's an old future story, if that makes sense.
Okay. Well, so taking all the intellect out of, you know, if you wipe out, you said 90%, you've wiped out a lot of people who were in the know of technology and that, and you're left with a smaller percentage rebuilding everything. Does that sound about right?
Exactly. And that's exactly what civilization. It's everyone kind of gathering these bits and pieces of information, trying to figure out what to do with it, basically.
Yes. Because that was one conversation that Jamie and I had is, you know, even the normal like civil rights stuff has kind of regressed really far to the point, you know, because we've made so much progress right now.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's gone back a little bit in like even women's rights, right?
Women's
like,
rights, and this was a big issue.
It's just really different. It's just different. And so I love the concept.
Yeah.
So a little, like just to, in case you haven't read, so there's, because civilization has been crumbled so far and they've created a new civilization with new laws, new rules, trying to just keep order, trying to repopulate.
And to learn from the past and
not make the same mistakes.
To prepare better for the future. Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like they take the best of the best. And those are the people who are allowed to repopulate, right? To kind of perfect the gene pool. And then the other people they're still allowed in society.
Right.
They just don't get to repopulate.
They don't get to repopulate. So they only want the best of genetics to continue on.
The idea of like a perfect race.
Exactly. So yeah, they basically say, well, we had millions upon billions of people in the old world is what they call it.
Mm-hmm.
absolutely nothing for them. So it's really a quality over quantity issue at this point. They're saying, we don't need millions of people. We need the best people. We need the smartest, the strongest, the healthiest. And the old world didn't know what they were doing, so we're going to make it better.
I love it. And at first, it sounds like a great idea, right?
Yeah, and that's kind of the point, too. It's the fall from good intentions to terrible actions.
Yeah. Because the reality is, like, it's great when you're on top. Exactly. But if you can't stay there, then what do you do to get yourself being able to stay there?
Yeah. And what do you do with the people who are not the people you want in your civilization? The rest, where are they?
The unfit.
Where do they go? Yeah.
I love it. It's so great. So tell me this. How did you come up with this idea?
So it's kind of been in the making for a while. I actually first got the idea of just making a story around principles of eugenics back in, 10th grade?
Okay.
In biology class, our teacher gave us an assignment. We were, partnered up and given a really controversial science topic we were supposed to do a report on, and my topic was eugenics. So I had to do this big report on the history of it and its role in even the United States government back in the day and how prevalent it was in Nazi Germany. And it was kind of the same thing we were just talking about, where part of me thought, I see where they were going with this, but this is terrible. This is just the worst thing ever. What on earth? And then I thought, this would make a really cool story.
That's amazing that it started bubbling. I mean, I don't know how old you are, but in 10th grade, and then you've just been like sitting on it and letting it create in your brain? Or did you start trying to write something out at that point?
No, I didn't start trying to write anything until maybe 5 years ago. So I've been sitting on the idea for at least a decade, just kind of letting it, marinate, trying to figure out what to write, how to write, all of that fun stuff.
Yeah.
Is being an author something you always wanted to do?
I always wanted to at least write one book. That was kind of a bucket list item, which at some point in my life, I want to write a book. And from there, the idea of like, I could actually do this as a career. I could actually, if I put in the work, I could actually, make something of this and be a quote unquote author. So that's been a more recent development in the last couple of years, but it's been really great.
That is so awesome. Have you written other things like as you've played with this idea, like short stories, or how do you gotten to the big book?
So I have written a couple of short stories. I have at least like four other book ideas outlined. At this point, it's really just actually writing them down and finding the time to do it. Because I also have three children all under the age of 8.
Yeah.
And especially right now, with work from home and distant learning, there's not so much free time.
No, I can understand that.
We're all
very well.
Crunch.
Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah. And you are based in California.
Yes.
And so you guys are all at home all the time, right?
Yep.
Yeah. That makes things really hard.
Yeah, I apologize to you. Hear my kids running in out of the room. I try
You're
to tell
welcome.
Them to go to quiet, but I don't know how long
that's
going to last. So
that's okay. Yeah, absolutely. No, that is so fun. So you have been a mom then foremost. You're staying home with your kids and then writing when you can find the time.
Yep.
That's a lot. Yeah. Good for you.
Yeah. Thank
you. What does your writing process look like? Like, do you schedule out time in the day or do you just take advantage of any quiet time when kids are napping or whatnot to write?
It's kind of a hybrid right now. I do have scheduled times. And of course, the old saying, you find time for the things that are important to you and the things you love to do. So I do have time that's scheduled right now. And also if there's some downtime and I feel so inclined, I'll say, hey, I'm just going to, pull up my computer and write out a couple of pages real quick. But really with the quarantine and just kind of how life has changed in general, the biggest thing I've had to learn is how to be flexible. And say, some days I'm going to be really productive and I'm going to write out you know, a whole chapter, maybe two. And some days I'm going to write a sentence, maybe two. And I need to find a way to be okay with that.
And either one is okay.
Yeah. Well, that's more than most, I'd say.
I'd say a sentence a day. Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
That's something rather than nothing. So we have to maybe change our goals a little bit, or what to be proud of. Changes Absolutely. A little bit in these times, because it's a lot harder.
I think that's just life in general right now, right? Yeah. Like just reframing our expectations for everything.
Yeah, I would agree.
So after you came up, like, did you finish the whole book before you went looking for like a publisher? Like, how did that work out?
So my story is pretty unique, though. So I would say the advice for most authors is you want a finished and polished manuscript before you start looking for a publisher or an agent or, you know, whatever route you decide to go. That being said, that was not what I did. So I was about 75% of the way done with Unfit and kind of losing steam. So my husband, as a kind of a way to help, you know, give me the kick in the pants I needed, bought me tickets to a writing conference. And part of the writing conference was you could go pitch your story to publishers. And I thought, you know, if nothing else, it'll be good practice. Let's see if anyone even thinks this idea is worth pursuing. So I went to a pitch meeting with Immortal Works, and I met with the editor-in-chief, Holly, and I gave her my pitch, and she said, yeah, that sounds really great. Send me the first chapter. And so I got the first chapter polished up, and from everything I had read, when you actually submit to a publisher, they say expect it to take anywhere from a month to a year for them to get back to you. Average is about 2 months for them to get back to you, and that's, you know, if they're on top of it. So I thought, okay, well, I'll send her the first 5 pages just to keep the ball rolling. And now I have 2 months to write the book and get it finished. Because like I said, I was only like 3/4 of the way done. So I sent her the first 5 pages. She got back to me within 24 hours and asked for the full manuscript.
Wow.
So I kind of got myself in a pickle there. So basically what I did was I spent the next 4 days just writing as vigorously as I could, got it finished and sent to her. And then a couple of days later, she wrote me back with an offer. So
that's amazing.
That is so amazing.
It was pretty crazy. But like I said, that's not at all a typical experience. So I feel bad relating my story to other authors and being like, but that's probably not what's going to happen. So.
But every other author is going to be like, no, you take it and you run with it if you get that opportunity. So nothing to be embarrassed about.
No way. That's amazing.
You own that. That is fantastic.
So that is awesome. And this book is the first in the series.
Yes, that's the plan. I'm working on the second one right now. It's turning into a monster. At the rate I'm going, this thing's going to be so much longer than the first. So I'm trying to get it trimmed down and polished, and so I can get it submitted to my publisher. But
so, do they give you like time frames, or do they kind of allow you the space you need? Like, how does that work?
I know some publishers, they give you time frames. My publisher, just because they're more indie and they're kind of newer, it's more of a send it when you have it, as opposed to a deadline.
Okay.
So when it's done, I'll send it in and we'll get it.
So you have time to be creative with it and not feel a lot of pressure to get it done. But for your readers, like, what's our timeline for the next? Now that I've finished the first one.
I know.
hopefully it'll as soon as I can get it. So hopefully.
No pressure.
Well,
no pressure.
I'm willing to wait for a good story. So it's okay.
Well, the one thing I can't confidently say is from the time you submit a book to a publisher, on average, it takes a year to get through all of the editing cycles, to go through cover art and you know, the e-arcs and everything. It takes about a year. So by the time I'm done, it'll be
a year out. So tell us about like the cover art process. That's something that's always interests me. I am one who definitely judges a book by its cover. And I know we're not supposed to, but oh, I love so a hard good cover.
Not to. Yeah.
And so tell me about that process and how much say you have in the cover.
So that was actually a really stressful process. I think it's stressful for every author because you're basically handing over your story to someone else and saying, put it in a picture, you know, take all of these words that I wrote and condense it into a picture that then is going to determine how interested people are in this book. Because I'm sure you guys have had it all the time where you look at a book and you look at the cover and you think, you know, the cover doesn't look great or it doesn't look professional. Therefore, how on earth can the writing be professional?
Yeah, not, well, that's true.
It's an unfortunate truth. And then there's been books I'd be like, this cover looks so dumb. And then I read it and I'm like, oh my gosh, this was the best book ever.
And vice versa. I shouldn't say like dumb, I pick up on because I love the cover. And then it's I'm not like, a good book. Oh, that was not what I thought it was going to be. Yeah, yeah. Like that.
And you're allowed to say dumb. You're fine.
I don't want to like be mean to anybody listening that has a cover that they love. I love your cover. So when I say
I did feel like your cover, like it was so creative, like, cause it is really right. Like anyway, I really did feel like your cover portrays what the book is about in such a good way. I don't know how they do that.
Well, it was a bit of a process cause, you know, the cover artist, ideally some cover artists, you know, can find the time to read the book, but if you're doing, you know, a cover every couple of days for different authors, you just don't have time to read the book. So a lot of it was like me trying to convey in one paragraph what the book was about to the cover artist, and she'd come back to me with something and I would say, let's tweak this. So I was lucky enough to have a cover artist who was willing to work with me because the first three versions she sent to me, I was a little picky about. I tried really hard.
That's fair, though. That's fair. Like all that work and effort. I know. To be right.
The best thing an author can do is not be a diva when it comes to your cover art, because I mean, cover artists work so hard. Yes. So, you know, as professionally and respectfully as I could, I tried to steer her in the direction of, you know, this is the feel of the book. This is, at one point, I think I even just sketched out the cover. Like I wrote unfit. I drew the red line on the wall. And I said, make this cover.
There you go. There you go. You knew what you wanted. I almost feel like that makes it easier on the artist, right? Like it's exactly what you want. Just put it together.
Yeah. Hopefully.
You're not trying to create an idea. You know what you want.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Yeah, I said they're not just trying to create an idea. They have you know exactly what you're looking for. I think that's good.
And who you know your book better than anybody. So having a say in it, that's definitely...
That's good.
Yeah.
That's great.
You had someone that would work with you.
It was really great being able to have a say in it. Otherwise, I probably would have had a complete panic attack.
I can understand that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You said that you had like ideas for like three or four other books. So do you just kind of put them on the back burner because you're trying to work on the next Unfit? Or do you
both? Book idea I'm really excited about, and I'm kind of using that one as motivation to finish the sequel.
There you go.
Get, you know, burnt out on the book I'm writing. So the first one's called Unfit. The working title for the second one is Unwanted. Mm-hmm. So rather than calling it the sequel, I'll just call it Unwanted. So that's not as confusing. Okay. So whenever I feel like I'm getting burnt out on Unwanted, I'll you know, just remind myself, oh, but when I'm done with this, I get to write my other book.
Yes.
Exactly. You get to have your ice cream.
There you go.
I like that. There you go.
Motivation, wherever it comes from. There you
absolutely.
Go.
Absolutely.
Nice. So when you're looking at writing a book, so I was fascinated by the names you used and how perfectly fitting they were to the story, characters. For the characters. Like I just felt, and I feel this with a lot of books I read, I'm like, ooh, that name didn't quite fit. Or in my head when I'm envisioning it. And so when I'm envisioning your story and reading it and these names were coming, it really struck me as, how does she pick character names? Like, how is that just something that, do you spend a lot of time on it or did it just come to you?
I did actually spend a lot of time on it. there were versions of the draft where I was writing it and I would say, and this is person number one, parentheses, pick name later. And then I keep writing because I just didn't have time to stop and think about, you know, what name should it be? And even when I submitted the first draft to Immortal Works, half of the characters had different names. There was a draft process where all I did was I went through and I thought, okay, this name doesn't fit. And I, you know, there were a lot of census searches, like what were people's names in this era? What were people's names in this era? Like trying to fit the feel of the people, and kind of, you know, what their belief system was, oddly enough, to kind of try to reflect that.
That makes sense because it does they so really do fitting. Feel. It really stood out to me how fitting these names were for this storyline. So
that's so good to hear.
Well done on the research there. It made me wonder that, which I haven't always pondered names. It just comes across.
Well, when you get into these kinds of novels or these kinds of books where it's not like it's dystopian, right? It's not our current time. So it's like you're really picking names that are different than what we're used to, except that these are very common names, but yet they fit so perfectly within the way the story is told. I don't know. It's so interesting.
I love the character Morgan and her name because I feel like it did stand out a little bit. I love the name Morgan and we hear that now
for a female character. Common.
Not super common, but I know a Morgan. But then she also doesn't fit in with her time as a character either. And so it's just really fitting and makes her stand out even more, I think. And that I love her character.
She's like a rising feminist.
Yes.
I love that
really
about
relate
her.
With her. And she has a fantastic name. So, yeah.
And it's so great that you noticed that because I actually didn't notice that until after the book was published. And I had another reader point that out to me because she was saying, like, you have all these very traditional names. And then there's Morgan.
Yeah.
Which doesn't really fit, but it totally was perfect because exactly like you said, Morgan doesn't fit in the time era, and it like blew my mind. Like I didn't even realize
that. We had that conversation earlier. I'm like, there's John and, you know, very traditional
Charles
names and Charles
Catherine.
And then Morgan did stand out to me because, and also because her character stands out so much. She is not one.
She's not going to be like
just
going to
slide by with everybody else. And
Morgan's my favorite character. She was my favorite to write.
Like that.
Still is my favorite to write.
She's just so strong. Like you're not going to tell her what to do. And you can't tell her what line to follow. Like she's going to do what is interesting to her and where she thinks she can make the biggest impact. I felt like that was awesome.
Yeah. And she has her own thoughts. There's other opinions going on, which she's hearing, but then she's not discounting her opinion of it from kind of standing outside a little bit of the community and looking in. From an outside perspective is kind of what I think her perspective is.
Yeah.
Which
I thought she just was a great, just like, and how much she was willing to sacrifice for her family. Like she was going to do whatever she could to be with John. Right. And to be able to have a family with him and the lengths that she went to, right. To be able to make that a reality. I love
the throw in, when he's in the asylum, when John's in the asylum and, who's the character that's with Tim?
Are you talking about Buck?
Buck. Yeah. And Buck's like, this is a story of tragedy. You should read it. And he's like, I've got my own tragedy, referencing, I'm assuming, Romeo and Juliet. And I loved that. I loved that they've got these old books. Whenever you throw a library in and talk books, I'm like, oh yeah, I love this area.
I agree.
That was great.
Yeah, that was so fun. I mean, and honestly, like I'm following the story along. I like this kind of story anyway. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, I love these kinds of books. And so I think there's so many lessons to be learned when you're taken out of a real life situation and put in a different one. I think you can see things a little bit more clearly, you know, like the things that are right and wrong. And then you can relate them to what's happening
to our
in real
society
life and have a better perspective on them.
Yeah, I agree.
And so I love that already about these types of books, but just the idea, I felt like I was following along. I kind of could see where we were going at first, you know, you could kind of see like, this isn't going to work out. Like that's never really a good idea to try to perfect the gene pool. Right. But then how, I mean, you weren't very far before all these new
twists kept coming. Like, it just like kept throwing something at you. And I was like, she would figure, like Morgan would figure out the problem and solve the problem, because she really was the problem solver in the story. Mm-hmm. And then they throw another twist and it was like, no, she just solved that problem.
Right. Well, but there's just so many layers in when you try to do something to this extent. It trickles down into so many different problems.
Yes.
You've got an overlying umbrella here, but.
And I will say, like, I don't want to give away the ending because that ruins the fun. And if anyone's listening that hasn't read it, I'm not going to tell you the ending, but I did not see the ending. Like, I like to figure it out. Like, I like to figure out what's coming. And I did not see the end. I was like, what,
all the way till the end?
I kind of thought I knew what was going, like when the big twist came and I thought, oh, this is what John will do, and he did not do what I thought he was going to do.
Oh,
anyway,
I want to know what you thought he was going to do, but that is very spoiler, isn't it?
It is
but we're off recording.
Yes, I can tell you, but I just was like, oh, and so that's why I am very interested to see, like, what is he going to do? Like, how is this going to resolve? I am so interested. So I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, good. I'm interested too, because there are some things that I haven't quite figured out. Like, I got myself in this hole, I'm like, shoot, how
do you have an idea, like, when you talk about it being a series, like, how many books it will go out? Do you have a map of where the ending you want to be is and how long that would take?
Yeah, absolutely. So right now the idea is a trilogy. So there will be three. I have the second book completely outlined, just trying to get it written. And I know where I want. So because I know how the second book ends, I know where the third book is going to start, and I know where I want it to end.
Okay.
The step in between is still, you know, a little flexible, but
that's the creative process, flexibility in there. Yeah.
For some people, I know some writers like have the entire thing outlined beginning to end before they write anything. And other writers are just like, let's see what happens. I'm kind of in the middle. I like to have an idea, but I like to allow a little bit of creativity in the middle.
I love Absolutely. That. That's yes. awesome. It is so fascinating to me, like how many different ways you can do the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it can just be so different for every person.
Yeah.
I think it's fascinating. And I mean, the idea to write a book to me is such a big deal. I think that's so cool that seems like the biggest dream of all. And to even
get there. And completely overwhelming. And
yeah. Like, I can't even imagine how to get from the start to the finish. I think that's such a huge accomplishment, and to be taking care of your family, you know, all at the same time. And Colton, your husband, Colton, what a huge support. I think that's the coolest thing, that he's trying to help you and keep you going. I think that's awesome to have people in your corner rooting for you and supporting you.
You really have to. I mean, it takes up so much time and is such a huge part of your life. I mean, it's basically your job.
Yeah. You know?
And so if you didn't have people who supported it, it wouldn't happen.
Right. And like, thought of it as a real thing, right? Like, it's not just like, hey, I'm going to go write. It's like, you know, there's no eye rolling or like, but I need you here. It's just as important. I think that's a really big deal.
How much of, when you turned the manuscript over to your publisher, mm-hmm. how much changing was there? Like, did you get back from her and you were like fighting? Like, no, that's has to be in there. Like, how much of that back and forth on your story did you have to give and take on?
For me, there was none.
None.
Okay. For some authors, because I have some author friends who have said, like, you know, I turned in my manuscript and they said, rewrite the entire beginning or add a chapter that does this or take out this chapter, you don't need it. For me, though, I didn't really have that experience.
Okay.
It was really just, they said, you know, this paragraph could be stronger or you need to, you know.
There were little things.
Yeah, it was like make your language, you know, stronger here. Make the perspective stronger. We need more descriptions. We need more this. You know, it was pretty straightforward for me. But we'll see on the next book. Maybe they'll rip it apart.
That's nice.
I'm sure it is different with every book.
Right.
But, you know, and maybe you've just found someone that you click with, which is really important too, I think.
Yeah, which is going to be interesting for this next book because my editor who did the first one, you know, She is amazing, but she has since retired from editing. Mm. So for the second book, we'll we'll figure out what the editor thinks, if she likes the story or you, whoever it's going to be.
Yeah, I think that definitely does play into things, like the person,
sure, that affects
if you're on the same page with where the story is going and all of that kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
For sure. That is so cool. The whole process to me is like, how, okay, so you have a published book, and then how do you get it out there? Like, how do you get people to pick up your book?
So that's the part that I'm still trying to figure out, you know, is the whole marketing thing. I never have really been super great at marketing, never really cared to be super great at marketing. That's just not my wheelhouse. So it's been a really interesting experience, you know, going outside of my comfort zone, you know, reaching out to libraries and magazines and book reviewers and saying like, hey, would you read my book? You
know? Yeah, absolutely. It would be, I would struggle with
that. That's, I think, probably the hardest part about creating something is then going out and selling yourself.
Yeah.
It is very uncomfortable at times. It's been a great experience too. Great learning experience. Great growing experience, I should say.
You're so positive.
Yeah. Thanks. You have to find the positive, otherwise you won't do it anymore.
Yeah. That's probably true, right? So there's not like this path that they're like, here's the step-by-step process. It's kind of just like,
depending,
throw yourself out there and figure it out.
And that's what's so daunting about it too, because, you know, you have the group of authors who swear that like social media and Instagram are the only ways to sell books. And you have others that say, oh no, Instagram doesn't do anything. You have to send out a newsletter. And then other people say, newsletters don't do anything. You have to buy Amazon ads. Like, there are all these
apps,
and no one has a clear path of which one will actually get you the results. They only know, this is what got results for me.
Yeah.
Your experience may differ. So it's a lot of trial and error.
Yeah.
Oh.
So what, I have two questions that I want to ask. We talk each week, well, not each week, but multiple weeks, about what's on our shelf, and we talk about what we've been reading lately. So what's on your shelf? What have you been reading lately?
Oh, so I'm kind of in between books right now. I've been doing a lot of audiobooks. If you don't
know. Me too.
We live for audiobooks.
Swear by audiobooks. Especially, absolutely, mentioned before, like the whole mom thing, it's like, I need to do dishes and fold laundry, I'm going to listen to an audiobook, because who can sit and read without their kids bugging them, you know?
You're in good company.
That's exactly what we do. If my AirPods are in, don't talk to me.
Exactly.
I might catch half of what you say, right?
So I just finished Wuthering Heights. I'm kind of on a classic.
Yes.
Like going back and rereading all these classics that everyone swears by that I haven't read in a decade or never did read to begin with. Teacher assigned, but maybe I just did the notes.
Know how that goes.
Yes. Well, and I also find when I read them a decade ago, it's totally different when I read it now.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So. Exactly.
Yeah. So I just finished, I did Wuthering Heights and Jane Eyre and Little Women, like back to back.
Nice. I just did Jane Eyre this year, or not Jane Eyre, Little Women, Women this year, and it was wonderful. It was so lovely.
It was so fun. And I know that book is always nostalgic to me too, because I grew up watching the movies and, you know, hearing the stories, and so reading it as an adult, it just felt like a warm blanket.
Yes.
It's like, it's so fun.
That's the perfect way to describe it. I love it.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and then now coming off of the warm, cozy classic kick, I'm getting into The Guest List by
My gosh, I'm listening to it right now.
I just finished it.
Loved it. Did you finish it?
I haven't started it yet. I just barely got the book yesterday, and so I'm going to start it hopefully soon. But I'm really excited about it. I've heard so many great things about it. And
I'm like halfway through. And it's like, I don't know what to say yet. Yeah. We can return
enjoy.
Back.
I'll say enjoy. It was.
I'm enjoying it. I'm just like, what's going to happen? And who is the victim? Like, I still don't know. It's still that I don't know.
You don't know the victim, or you don't know the murderer?
No, I don't even, neither.
What?
It's so great. You know something's happened because they give you these snippets, but I don't know what happened and I don't know who. Anyway, but the characters are so vivid that it's really fun.
And the scenery, the setting is so unique and eerie. It's great. You'll love it.
I'm so excited.
Fun one.
I love Oh, I said, I love eerie thrillers, so I'm so excited.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've read more mysteries lately. Jamie is an influencer of mystery, so I found myself trying these thriller type books, more of these thriller type books. Yeah. And then they've been
definitely
fun.
More my genre.
Oh yeah. Well, that was another kick I went on earlier this year was Agatha Christie. A bunch of hers and just really love it.
Right. Yeah.
So
my son's in high school and he's a big Agatha Christie fan, and I have read a couple of hers, but he really got me into more Agatha Christie. Yeah.
She's a good one.
Yeah.
Well, and I love that there, you can go see a play of her books. Like, you know, they're not all of them. I don't know how many have turned into a play, but I've at least seen one at the theater, at Hill Center Theater. Which one was it? Now I need to think about it.
Well, they just came out with a movie. Murder on the Orient Express a couple of years ago. Like,
people are
still remaking her stories. It's crazy.
Yeah. It's amazing.
I mean, it's just so, she's just classic.
She knows how to keep you on the edge of your seat.
Yeah. And I just read something else that was so reminiscent of Agatha Christie. What did we just read when I said to you, this is like a, like they had characters in a,
was
oh,
it
was Ruth Ware.
Yes.
What was that called?
One by One.
One by One.
Was that's very a newer similar one. That just came out this year too.
The characters all together in a hotel. And anyway,
don't want to use that one. Away.
No.
So many of like the modern whodunits, like I watched, what was it? Knives Out.
Yes. And
like, this feels like an Agatha Christie story.
Yes.
Absolutely. I love that movie too. Yeah. Yeah. That's a really fun one.
Yep. You can't go to a whodunit without giving her credit for
the genre. She completely invented the genre. It's amazing.
Yes. Very
so
amazing.
So cool.
So what were, on the same page, what were influential books in your life that just grabbed you in and were like, I love reading?
There are two books that I've reread at least twice, maybe three times. I'm not really a rereader. Once I read a book, I'm kind of like, well, now I know the story. I know how it's going to end. So why would I read it again?
I'm the same.
I am too.
Yeah. But there are two books that I have reread several times, and that's To Kill a Mockingbird and Ender's Game, which are very dramatically different books.
Very different.
Very interesting.
So Ender's Game actually was a big influence for Unfit. And there were so many times where I would sit down to write and just think, like, I am stuck. Like, I don't feel this scene at all. I don't know what to do. So I would pick up a copy of Ender's Game, just open to a random page and start reading. And then be like, oh, okay, now I know what to do. Set the book down, start writing.
That's awesome.
That is. I remember having to read that. I think it was in eighth grade in my English class, it was required. And I was like, oh, I do not like this type of book. I was a big reader, but it forced me outside of my genre and it caught me. Like, I loved it.
Yes. I'm a lot like you. Like, I'm not a huge, I don't think I've read any other like sci-fi space books like that. Like, it's not really my preferred genre.
Right. I would never jump into it on my own.
Yeah. Right. But I love that book.
That's awesome. It's a memorable one for me as well.
Those are both good ones.
Yeah.
So what is your go-to genre then?
I kind of recently discovered my go-to genre because I always thought, like, I classify myself as a nerd. So I always thought, like, yeah, fantasy, sci-fi, you know, all those epic genres, you know. But the more I try to, like, I try to read, I'm probably going to get so much crap for saying this, but I've tried to read the Wheel of Time books like three different times.
Oh.
And I personally am having a hard time getting into it. So I kind of just reached the point where I'm like, maybe I'm not an epic fantasy person.
It's okay.
No. Yeah. You know what? There's a time and a season, I think, for all genres. And maybe that time has passed.
We'll
come back later.
We'll come back later. I feel the same way. Like, there are certain books that people loved.
Mm-hmm.
I could list them.
We've had this conversation.
I hated. And people look at me like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
But yeah, there are just some things. But I do believe that if I were to reread some things later at a different time, books hit you at a certain time in your life more than other times and more at times than other
Absolutely.
Times.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
I won't completely discredit anything yet. Even if I didn't enjoy it and everyone else did, maybe later down the road, I'll try it again.
There you go.
Maybe. And if not, don't feel like you ever have to read those books. There's plenty of other books in the world.
There are so many books.
There's way too many to say you have to read this one. Yeah. So.
That's true. Maybe someday I'll give another try, but I know for right now, I'm really, I guess, to actually answer your question. That's a very roundabout way to get to your question. Sorry. Lately, I've really been liking, you know, like thrillers and kind of more, I guess you would call them just contemporary thrillers. Like I read my first Stephen King book this year. Ooh. And I enjoyed it. I mean, part of me was like, it wasn't as scary as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And so I read a couple other of his books and found some that I absolutely loved. And then that got me into more thrillers like The Guest List. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, got me to think like, oh, I should go check out, you know, Agatha Christie's and, you know, go and read all these other classics. So yeah, just definitely more, I guess, contemporary is what you would call it.
Yeah. So have you read any Simone St. James?
I haven't.
Ooh, check her out. You'll like her.
She's a good one.
She's definitely more contemporary, like mystery. It's not scary.
But ghosts.
But like ghost
paranormal
stories.
Paranormal activity.
Yeah. That's kind of fun. Try One by One by Ruth Ware. Mm-hmm. That's definitely more up the alley of Agatha Christie.
Yeah.
Oh,
and if you ever need any more recommendations.
Is it Lock Every Door?
Lock Every Door.
Riley
Sager.
Sager. There it is. That's a good one.
I just love that title.
Lock Every Door.
Yeah.
It will go, I did not see where that one was going.
I don't think you're meaning Lock Every Door.
Are you sure?
That's another Riley Sager. Oh, you're right.
I think I am.
You're right. Sorry. We'll
I'll
edit that
check.
Because I can't be wrong.
No, I'm going to double check because I might
you're
be
right.
Wrong.
No, with there's the other one that's Ruth Ware that is Return of the Key. That's what I was thinking.
Oh.
That's why I was mixed up.
Yeah, this one.
Ooh, okay.
That's Lock Every Door. So it
that was good.
Did you end up reading it?
I did.
So it has a twist at the end. Like I did not see where that book was. That was a fun one.
That was good.
Yeah, that was a fun one. Oh, I could just sit and talk.
We could
about
talk books all day.
I know. I need to go read these books now so I can talk about the twist at the end.
Yes. No. We love a good book, and that's why we loved your book. It's so fun. I'm really excited for our listeners. I don't know that a lot of them, I know I mentioned it in one of our What's on Your Shelf because when I read it, I talked about it. But we talked about it with other books. So I hope that now they'll go out and find it and want to read it because it is so fun. So, and it's really, for me, I felt like it's not one that you like, that kind of takes a really long time to get through. Like, I feel like you can really get through it quickly.
Well, and it grabs you right from the beginning. So it's one to sit down and just binge very easily.
Yeah.
Binge it.
Totally.
I love it. I love when I can get so much into, like get so into a book and,
other
and it forced
away.
Me to have to sit down and read it because there's not an Audible. And so it was a fun.
Yes.
Yet? Is there a yet?
Is it
good.
Coming?
There will be one eventually. I don't know exactly if it's coming out, but they are, I think they already found a narrator.
Awesome.
The publisher takes care of all of that. I'm not in the loop on this, but there will be an Audible.
So have you ever wanted to be your own narrator?
Not really.
Because some authors, right, they do their own narration.
Yeah, and to the ones who do, they are... I just think like that's amazing. You are multi-talented. I like to think I know my limitations. The book is not something that I think I could do well.
So. It would take a lot of dramatics.
Yes, and I've listened to books who narrate their own that maybe shouldn't, and I've listened to those that narrate their own that I absolutely adore. So it can, I think, it's knowing your level and what you want to do and how passionate you are about it. So, but I love a good Audible, but it was also fun to sit and read yours. It was almost nostalgic of being able to sit and read a book and just like, I locked myself in my bedroom and I just was like, everyone leave me alone. I've got to get this book read. And then it was a really good excuse to lock myself in my room chair and read a book instead of wash dishes and listen to a story. It was actual dedicated reading time, which was,
I don't
much
think
needed.
Because I listen so much, like we're busy moms, right? Like I'm a busy mom. I'm driving my kids. I'm a chauffeur 90% of the time, right? Driving kids around, doing everything. And so it's just a really easy fallback to put in my headphones and just consider, oh, I've read today, right? Like I've gotten my book in today and during all these other times, but there, it is a different experience to read a book.
I agree.
Like to sit down and to really look at the pages, and it's calming and relaxing and it's peaceful. Anyway, I love to read a book.
I loved actually sitting and reading it. So I'm excited for an Audible version.
Yeah.
But it was really lovely to sit and read your book. So where can our listeners find out more about you, and where can they go to get your book?
Awesome. So yeah, if they want to learn more about me, they can just go to my website, just Karma Chestnut. Karma with a K, Chestnut with no T in the middle. My name is a nightmare for people to spell.
We'll link it so that people know.
Yes, we'll link it.
Yeah, so it's just karmachestnut.com. And I'm also on social media, on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook. Just, you know, type in Karma Chestnut. I'm like the only person that comes up. So I'm very easy to find.
You are the Karma Chestnut.
I am the Karma Chestnut.
Fantastic.
Weirdness and all.
Yeah.
I love it.
And, if they want to buy the book, it's on Amazon. And it's even available on Kindle Unlimited. So if you subscribe to Kindle Unlimited already, you get it for free.
You get it for free.
Awesome. I didn't know that.
That's cool.
That is great.
And if you're like me and, you know, need the hard copy version in your hands for the nostalgic feel, then you can order it.
They can order it on Amazon or get the Kindle Unlimited.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Thank you so much for joining us, Karma. This was so fun.
Thank you.
That was so fun talking to her.
So fun. I hope we get to do this more in the future.
I find it so interesting how these authors create these stories in their minds, put it onto paper, and then somehow manage to get it published.
Right.
I mean,
going
it's amazing.
Going through the publishing process, and so different.
Yes.
Everyone has such a different experience with that. And I'm fascinated about book cover art.
Oh,
and
that was so cool.
That it's just so fun to be able to ask all those questions.
I know.
And oh,
I just thought, thank you so much, Karma. I mean, we said that already, but thank you. You're awesome.
Yeah.
We really appreciate your time. And next week, stick with us. We have What's on Your Shelf.
Yay, yay, yay.
Love talking about that. I've got some really good ones.
I've got some piling up here, so it's time to get them out.
Like, really want to talk about them.
Yeah.
And thank you to Amphibious Zoo.
Yes, for our music. You can reach us Instagram or Facebook. Let us know any questions you have for Karma. We can throw out more questions to her if you have any after listening to this interview. So you can reach us there for that, or email at thisisyourbookclubpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah.
We'd love to hear from you.
I think that's it.
We'll see you next week.
I'm Sarah.
And I'm Jamie.
And this is your book club. Thank you.